Chapter 42. Instantly, Arthur was suspicious.
Why do you want me to visit the hatchlings? Is there rare available or something?
Not that it would do him a lick of good. From what he had gleaned from casual conversations with Horatio, a dragon would not link to someone who had a higher tier card in their heart. Even if a common hatchling found someone with a card in the same set, the presence of an uncommon or rare card would disrupt the bonding. This had a dark side, Horatio had revealed. Ambitious riders could break a card link with a dragon they felt they had outgrown. He remembered two instances in his old hive of common riders doing just that to move up to an uncommon quality dragon instead. This was something that was looked down upon and was relegated to nobles who cared more about family honor than the feelings of their dragons. Those unlinked dragons still could relink onto someone else, but the whole experience was traumatic to them. Arthur remembered the red dragon that had given him his Master of Skills card. He had been riderless. Had something like that happened to him? Someone who had been associated with Baron Kane? In any case, all this meant that unless there was a legendary hatchling within the hive nest, he had little to worry about. Kenzie snorted at his question.
What? Do you think I'm hiding a rare up my sleeve?
This was clearly supposed to be a joke. One that Arthur didn't get. He stayed silent. Her eyes narrowed.
How long have you lived here?
A little under 6 months.
Well, that explains it,
she nodded once.
Well, having a rare egg laid is a big deal. The hive throws a whole festival for it. Then another one when the dragon links up to a new rider.
She grinned down at him.
It's a big hullabaloo. You'll see all sorts of snooty nobles, kids. Not the heirs, all the spares. Suddenly find a reason to transfer into the hive. Some of them practically make a career of hopping from hive to hive, chasing the next rare egg.
What about legendary eggs?
Arthur asked with what he hoped was the right amount of casualness.
Or mythic?
She snorted.
Half of those noble kids are willing to tear out each other's throat with a smile for a rare. Could you imagine it if a legendary was laid?
I don't even think this hive has ever produced a mythic.
Arthur knew he shouldn't push, but he couldn't help it.
When was the last time a legendary was laid here?
Oh, that's Whittaker.
She waved a hand vaguely upward, indicating the high levels.
30 or 40 years ago? He's one of the hive admins with Valentina, the other legendary. She's ancient.
Arthur had other questions, but Kenzie grabbed his wrist and pulled him to the door, calling over her shoulder to Martine.
I'll be back soon.
Martine sleepily lifted a wing in reply, more interested in dozing in the sunlight spilling in from her new window than visiting the hatchlings. Kenzie led Arthur down a new tunnel with marble walls colored like golden sand. This one led deep into the hive, with few junctions leading off in other directions. Unlike other tunnels, it was narrow enough for two people to pass through, but not large dragons. When Arthur asked about this, Kenzie nodded.
It's best to keep the little unlinked dragons from the adults.
For once, she didn't explain further, which left the why up to the imagination.
But how do the female dragons go in to lay their eggs?
Arthur asked.
There's a whole different area where they do that. It's kind of an open-air arena. Once they're laid and the dragon knows the eggs are in good hands, she leaves. The egg security teams take over the rest. Egg security's a good job if you can get it,
she added as an aside.
It's mostly just waiting around, since the eggs take care of themselves. But the hive pays well for the trouble. Those dragons are the future kingdom's protection, after all.
Arthur filed that away in the back of his mind. If he was hard up for card shards, he might consider it. But standing around being a guard for unhatched eggs didn't sound like a way to get more skills. Along the way, adding skills had become just as important as gaining more cards. His skills had taken him from his borderland village all the way to the inside of a hive. He couldn't let himself forget that. Before long, he heard the echo of distant voices down the tunnel. Laughter and high-pitched calls to one another. It sounded like a daycare for small children. The end of the tunnel opened to reveal a cavernous hollow. It held three areas fenced off from one another with basic wood planks. Inside the fenced areas were baby dragons. There were perhaps 24 in total, in a variety of colors. At first glance, they seemed to be separated mostly by size. The smallest hatchlings were positioned closest to the mouth of the tunnel. Purples, blues, and one lime-green dragon tumbled, squealed, and played with one another. They were surrounded by a variety of toys, from a sturdy leather ball to plush, soft, animal-shaped toys, just like a child of 2 or 3 would like to play with. Currently, the tiniest dragons were clustered around an upturned bucket. The goal of the game was to knock down whoever managed to scramble to the top first. A tiny dark purple dragon the size of a dinner plate glanced over at Arthur and Kenzie as they walked in. It quickly looked away, attention grabbed just as quickly by a new king on the top of the bucket. Arthur and Kenzie moved on to the second fenced-in area. These had larger dragons, some as large as a big dog, in other colors of fiery reds, oranges, pinks, and yellows. One of the yellows trotted over to sniff curiously before returning to the group. They were less boisterous, and there was a certain air of intelligence that the first group lacked. This was reflected in their toys. They had balls and stuffed animals, some of which were burned at the edges, but also basic board games and one lone child's book with a broken spine.
"This second group is the uncommons," Kenzie said.
She watched the dragons closely, as if waiting for something. A reaction from the baby dragons, perhaps, to see if any of them were interested in Arthur. She was slyly checking to see if he carried another card in his heart. None of the babies could link with him, but they might give him a curious sniff if they sensed he had another card. Well, he did, but it certainly wasn't one of the lower-ranked cards. Arthur pretended like he didn't notice what she was doing.
"Who are they?"
he asked, nodding to a few young men and women in soft white uniforms. They mingled with the baby dragons, occasionally tossing a ball for one of them and breaking up scuffles that got too intense. They also didn't seem to be carded. It wasn't something he could put his finger on because everyone looked well-fed, but they didn't have that indefinable aura of health and vitality that clung to carded people. With a start, he realized he had grown so used to seeing only carded adults that it now looked odd to find someone normal.
"Those are the nest attendants," Kenzie said.
"They aren't carded?"
She shook her head.
"There's no rule that says you have to be to work here. But carded attendants tend to link up with a dragon eventually. Some people want to be paid well, but don't want to be dragon riders."
She shrugged. Arthur was about to ask something else when there was a motion from the tunnel entrance. As one, all the common hatchlings had perked up and started squeaking like baby birds who sensed the return of a parent with a juicy worm in its beak. They crowded against the sides of the fence, looking toward the tunnel. A moment later, a boy of 15 years old or so walked in, flanked by 2 adults who must have been his parents. Judging by their sturdy but worn clothing, Arthur guessed they were from a farming community. One of the nest attendants strode up to welcome them in. Then he led the boy to the squeaking hatchlings. Some of the squeakers stared hard at the boy before they turned away, uninterested again. 2 blues remained, bouncing up and down and flapping stubby wings which were too small to fly. They weren't the only ones. A tan dragon in the third group looked on anxiously. Arthur and Kenzie hadn't yet gone past the third group, but he could see they were the shimmer-quality dragons. The one that stared at the boy was tan with an overly blocky head and feet. It would have looked completely ordinary if not for the fact its scales caught the torchlight and glimmered as if flaked by chips of diamonds. The boy hesitantly approached the squeaking blues. The tan gave an outraged bellow. With a flap of uncoordinated wings, it leaped over the wood plank fence, only to land flat on its face. It righted itself at once and charged straight at the group to stand in front of the blues. With a gesture of its paw, an image of its card popped up in front of it. The 2 blues squeaked in outrage and did the same. From where he stood, Arthur couldn't see the faces of the cards. Blues usually had powers dealing with water and browns the element of earth. A shimmering tan would be an off version of that. He made to move to get a closer look. Kenzie caught his arm.
"Don't. This is supposed to be private."
In fact, most of the nest attendants were circling as if trying to block the view from outsiders.
"What happens now?"
Arthur asked.
"That's up to the boy."
The farmer's boy studied the three offered cards in front of him. His father opened his mouth as if to offer his opinion, but one of the nest attendants shushed him. It was clear that this was to be the boy's choice alone. Arthur wondered if anyone had ever rejected the dragon's cards completely. That wasn't to be the farmer's boy's fate today. He said something to the tan, and then, with a grimace, pulled down the collar of his shirt and pulled out his card from his heart. The tan did the same, and they pressed the cards together. There was a flash of light. A new card was born, made from the joining from the boy and dragon. For a moment, all three cards flashed between them, visible as day, but hard to look at, like staring at the sun. They twisted and turned in the air, the fronts briefly facing Arthur. Only Arthur's advanced reading skills let him skim over the cards at a glance. The boy had a common well-seeker card, used to find fresh underground water sources. The tan had a common earth element manipulation card, with a few caveats Arthur didn't have time to read. Doubtless they were advantages brought by the tan's shimmering qualities. The new card was a spell with the ability to use groundwater to create cutting water jets under an enemy. The bright light was too much. Arthur blinked, and impressions of the cards had already faded from the air. The boy tucked his card back into his heart, along with his half of the new card. Then he bent and hugged his new dragon. A friend for life, and partner, who had helped turn his common card into a potentially powerful tool against the Scourge. Now Arthur understood why Kenzie had brought him here. He wanted that too. Arthur was unusually quiet as Kenzie led him away from the dragon nests. He glanced behind himself before they rounded the first bend in the tunnel. The farmer boy was still crouched next to his new dragon, petting the tan's neck and speaking softly to him. His parents stood nearby, arms around each other's waists. The nest attendants, too, looked pleased with the new dragon pair. A couple of the unlinked dragons glanced Arthur's way, but their gazes slid over him, disinterested. He didn't have the type of card that they craved. For the first time, he felt truly bad for misleading Kenzie. He had to bite the tip of his tongue to keep from blurting out about the legendary card in his heart. Doshi had said his rider had waited 5 years for a rare dragon that would link up with him. Legendaries were hatched so much less often than that. This entire giant hive had only two. In Arthur's rare moments of free time, he had let himself wonder what kind of dragon would accept him, what card would it have, and what kind of powerful card could they create together. Seeing the hatchling link with the boy right in front of him had never made that daydream feel so far away. The wisest thing to do, he knew, would be to focus on his skills. Those were what had carried him this far. Those were what would make him powerful and rich in the future. Yes, being a dragon rider was one way to get enough power to help his dad and the others back home at the border, but that wasn't the only way. Straightening, he nodded to himself and did his best to match stride with the longer-legged Kenzie. It wasn't as hard as it had been in the past. Maybe he was finally growing a little. "Where are we going now?" he asked, belatedly realizing he'd just let her lead the way. She smiled down at him as if she knew what he was going through. Considering she could see auras and feel emotions, she probably did. "You wanted another kitchen to work in, right?"
"Right!"
He perked up immediately, the sting of disappointment fading. How could he have forgotten? Maybe he needed to work on a memory skill.
Nah, that probably went with a body enhancement card.
Kenzie chose a tunnel that took them sharply downward, back to the ground level. It was not a lively place, with half of the shop shuttered, though Arthur caught several signs stating business hours would begin in the early evening. This was a place with nightlife. Kenzie led Arthur to a hole-in-the-wall entrance. Literally, it was a perfectly round door, cut to match a shaped hole in the stone wall. There were no windows. She paused for a moment to look back at him, hand on the door handle.
"As I said, they don't usually allow little kids in here, so mind your P's and Q's. It shouldn't be dangerous, but men and women can get stupid when they're drunk."
"It's not even noon,"
he said, surprised. Even the roughest men in the caravan didn't start drinking until they'd stopped for the evening. Kenzie snorted like he'd made a joke, then pushed the door open. The smell of stale beer hit him like a slap in the face. Arthur almost backed out, but since Kenzie didn't flinch, pride kept him moving forward. The inside was exactly as he imagined a real tavern to be. A bar set up in front, with bench seating for people who wanted to drink together in large groups. What got his attention was the card tables set up in the middle, dominating the room. This was also a place for people to gamble. There might have been more, but it was currently so dark that Arthur couldn't see the corners. He relied on Kenzie to lead the way forward. She walked confidently up to the bar and stood next to a heavy-set bearded man who sat with a half-drunken beer next to him. The man looked at her and said,
"We're not open."
Then he pulled from the drink.
"Bob," Kenzie said, "I got you a serving wench."
Arthur jerked in surprise. Bob did too, looking over to Arthur before he snorted a laugh.
"He ain't got the tits to be a wench."
"You need someone who won't get slapped on the ass every time they serve a drink," Kenzie said. "He's only a little guy now."
"Hey," Arthur said weakly, unsure if he liked where this was going.
"But I've been watching him. He's tough and smart. He'll grow, and he's available to work."
She leaned forward slightly.
"For the right price."
The man looked more interested.
"You can pour beer, boy?"
"Yeah,"
Arthur said, and on impulse offered,
"I know card and dice games, too."
Bob didn't answer directly to that, but Arthur thought he caught a glimmer of interest in his eyes. His acting skill whispered that Bob likely wasn't as drunk as he was acting either. Kenzie didn't seem to think so either. She haggled as if the man was entirely lucid.
"He's a recruit, so you'll pay him hive rates."
At this, Bob frowned.
"I ain't having a little boy serve the night crew. Not until he's old enough to knock a man in the jaw hard enough to make him think twice."
"I can do meal prep,"
Arthur said, thinking quickly. He rattled off the hours he was available to work, as well as the basic duties he took care of under Barlow's watch. Then he finished with,
"But I gotta get off work before second afternoon bell. I have a shift at the Salt and Spoon."
Bob's bushy eyebrows rose.
"You work for Barlow?"
"I do, sir. He wants me full-time, but I want a different kitchen experience."
"Ha! I bet that chaps his ass. That man's always been a snob."
Bob slapped his own knee and gestured to the back of the bar. Now that Arthur was close enough to see details, he noted the sheer wall of barrels, all stacked from the floor to the very top of the ceiling, and it was a high ceiling. Each barrel had a different label and was tapped with a spigot. Two ladders on either end allowed the pourers to reach the higher kegs.
"We have the finest collections of beer in this forsaken hive, and you haven't seen our wine room yet. This place don't look it, but nobles come from all around the kingdom to sample our wines."
Bob grinned proudly at Arthur. For the first time, Arthur understood why Kenzie had brought him here. It was a rough place, but perhaps not a bad place for a boy who wanted to learn.
"Which is why you can afford to pay hive rates," Kenzie pressed.
"Yes, yes, fine."
Bob drank deeply again, pausing to wipe away foam from his upper lip before he said,
"4 hours a day at hive rates, that's 2 silver coins, and a common a week, with a bonus uncommon bimonthly."
Arthur had to struggle not to let his eyes bug out from his head. From Bob's smirk, he didn't succeed.
"One thing," Arthur said, "you aren't calling me a serving wench."
"Course not."
Bob slapped one ham hock hand against Arthur's shoulder.
"You're a barman."